This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play via the iHeartRadio app.
First and third, I thought were great periods for us. You know, a little bit of a lull in the second, but third period was championship hockey. You know, guys were committed to blocking shots. Guys were paying the price physically. You know, kind of up and down the board, guys were doing their jobs. And that's the kind of hockey we need going into the playoffs. You know, I think we've had a little bit of defensive lapses, and, you know, this was a good step in the right direction. And I think if we keep playing that way, we're going to be a really hard team to beat.
Oh, yes, I would agree with that, Blake Coleman, no doubt about that. That was a good game last night, for sure. At times, kind of boring, but I think for the Lightning and where their game is and where they want it to be, boring can be okay when you have Andrei Vasilevsky to bail you out. Didn't have to face a ton of shots, but the Lightning did enough and beat a team who, let's face it, needed that game more than they did. And the Lightning shut out the Stars last night at Amalie Arena 3-0. We're going to talk about it for the next hour. Dave Andrechuk coming up in about 20 minutes or so. Dave Michigan, of course, is my partner. I'm Greg Linnelli. Steve Ersnick producing at Bolts Radio. I know it was the most recent win, but was that one of the better wins over the last couple of weeks for the Lightning? Vasi continues to put his stamp on being the best goaltender in the game, and you wonder, getting a shutout, does that inject some more life into the MVP discussion? We certainly can discuss that. And just in general, I thought, Dave, a solid game. I think we all were expecting maybe the first period to have a few more fireworks, at least on the Stars' end, meaning coming out with a little more pace and a little more tenacity. Some of that could have just been the flow of the game and maybe the way Tampa Bay played. But I thought things picked up in the second period for sure. But I thought all in all, I mean, you can't be displeased with a shutout against a team that needs wins.
I think you asked me just as we were wrapping up yesterday's show, what do you want to see tonight from the Lightning? And what I said was not being shorthanded 7 times. Check. They were shorthanded twice. They actually scored the shorthanded goal. I said limit opposition chances. Check. And then match the intensity of the other team for the most part. Check. So I don't know that they matched it. They exceeded it in the first and third. They were not able to match it in the second, which is why puck possession swung back and forth. But to me, the first two were almost more important, particularly the team defense part of things. I thought that was as committed a defensive performance as we've seen from the Lightning in several weeks. The Lightning are now 5-1 against the Stars, and I would make the argument that 3 of those 5 wins have been 3 of their best defensive performances of the year. And interestingly, one of the shutouts, Vasilevsky has 3 shutouts, but the 3 shutouts are not the 3 games that I'm talking about. 2 of them are, but there was a 2-0 shutout win he had in Dallas, the second meeting between the teams, that was all Vasilevsky. The third game is the one that the Lightning won 2-1, and that was the game in which Vasilevsky said afterward, that might have been the easiest game I've ever had, or something to those lines. Remember that game, Greg, is kind of afterward?
For sure.
And so the Lightning have done this to the Stars already this year, twice. They haven't done it in every game, but they did it again last night. And in the first and the third, they did it kind of with the formula that you've talked about, which is having the puck a lot. When you have the puck a lot, it's hard for the other team to do much. And the Lightning did a lot of good things to not let the Stars have the puck much. Not only in the offensive zone, when the Stars tried to move it through neutral ice, the Lightning were on them. They just took pucks away. And the Stars had very little going offensively. Forget about shots and chances, just even having the puck in the first and the third. In the second period, I don't want to say it was more impressive, because you heard the quote from Blake Coleman. Like, he's right. They played championship hockey in the first and third, and they were not at a championship level in the second in terms of their puck management. And the Stars' level went up. I mean, that was part of it too. But what I loved about the Lightning second period is something that I know I have been talking about in recent weeks, and I know I talked about a lot during the playoff run last year, and that is when you are struggling with puck management and the other team has the puck a lot, or maybe just the other team is dialed in, the other team has raised its level, and you're facing a headwind, buckle down defensively and kind of weather the storm and don't allow many chances. And in the second period, a period in which the Lightning were credited with only two shots on net and only six shot attempts, which tells you how little they had the puck in the second period. To the best of my recollection, the Stars had a total of two good scoring chances. They had Roope Hintz on a two-on-one. Vasilevskiy made the save. And then they had Jamie Benn right at the end of the period with our favorite Stars defenseman, Jamie Oleksiak.
Yes.
Going into the corner and centering it. And Benn swatted it out of the air. And Vasilevskiy made a great save. Those are two great saves. But they were Vasilevskiy's two toughest saves of the night. And in a period in which the Stars dominated play as much as they did in terms of being hungry on pucks and having the puck a lot and spending a ton of time in the offensive zone, for the Lightning to only allow, and I kind of use this in the context of how the period unfolded, they only allowed 12 shots, and the Stars only had 18 shot attempts. Now, that would be like medium high in a regular period, but in a period where they had like 85% of the puck possession, that's actually low, both those numbers. And the scoring chance number was especially low. So I would even include the second period as a period in which the Lightning defended well, defended hard. They were very committed to D-ing up, which is why Vasilevskiy had a fairly routine night in net. That is championship-level team defense. And they did it against a team that's desperate for points, which I can't really figure out the Stars. I mean, were you surprised that we didn't see what we saw from the Stars in the second period was not what we saw at the start of the game. And that was very surprising to me. Maybe once you get into the third, they expend a lot of energy in the second. They're still down.
Yeah.
Maybe you sag a little bit. Like that one, I guess I can understand it a little bit more, but they came out like it was some garden variety regular season game in the, you know, second month of the season type of game in the
and,
first
you know,
period.
In fairness to them, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I think you need to find a way to, right from the get-go, find the energy to impose your will. But I will say this. I mean, the Ani Gord line had three shots right off the bat.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it put them on their heels, but you know, Goodrow had a shot from the slot. I think Gord had one. I think Coleman had one. So the Lightning, I felt like, came out and maybe surprised, and I don't even know if that's the right word, shocked the Stars a bit, because you're thinking the Stars are going to come out and really establish themselves, whether it's on the forecheck, whether it's just playing a physical brand of hockey. And there were the Lightning, after the Stars had a little bit of possession to start the game, they methodically bring it out, and they get three quick shots. And, you know, maybe that kind of settled things down a bit, and, you know, Dallas had to be careful when it came to how this first period was going to be going. Because, Dave, keep in mind, as you know better than anybody, how many shutouts does Tampa Bay have against Dallas? Let's go back to the Stanley Cup Finals, which was a shutout.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you include Game 6, 4 six games.
Yeah,
right?
And let's face it, they don't have...
Seven games.
Yes, two of their best offensive players are not in this game. So they get down, they're probably looking at it like, all right, we get down and Vasilevskiy's in net. We have not solved that guy. They might have been a little hesitant, like, wait a minute. All right, the Lightning, they've come to play. We can't start running around a bit. Not saying they would, but I think give credit to the Lightning, at least initially, for generating a bit of offense to put Dallas back on their heels, or maybe kind of squashing any type of emotion they may have had early on to try and get things going from the start. Because you're right, the second period they were really good, meaning the Stars, but you're wondering why didn't they have that in the first period. And it could have been because the Lightning punched first and got them on their heels just a bit.
Maybe.
The other thing too is Dallas didn't really have any second chance opportunities in that game.
Well, that's because the Lightning defended so well.
They did. That's what I mean. It was one and done. And that's a game where you really miss Sagan and Radulov. Because those guys, I mean, they're really good offensive players. It gives you a couple of other options. I mean, for as good as we've talked about some of the other guys who have performed well, Hintz and a couple of other younger players that they have on their team that have done pretty well, they really don't have a ton. They've got to generate some from their back end too, and it's just a team that's undermanned offensively. And so in some ways it's not surprising they only had, what, 20 shots on goal and very, very few second scoring chances. But Dave, that was a game that really they probably needed a couple of high-end players to push them over the hump, because I thought Pavelski was pretty quiet. I mean, you didn't hear much from him. And, you know, outside of Jamie Benn, I didn't think they were really threatening at all offensively up front.
Jamie Benn had a heck of a game. He tried to will his team to victory, especially in that second period.
What did he end up playing? I have to look at his box score. It felt like he was on the ice for 25 minutes.
Yeah, you know? At one point Phil asked me and I looked it up. It was in the third period because, you know, the NHL app, you can look up kind of in the moment. It was shortly after Coleman had scored on the penalty shot. And they only had him at like 13 minutes. So I think we have to take the stat sheet sometimes with a grain of salt.
You mean the whole year?
Face-offs. So they had Jamie Benn, not to go off on a tangent. I'm going to pull this back in, but I know sometimes I go off on a tangent, but this one was noteworthy to me. So I don't remember seeing Jamie Benn lose a face-off in the first period. And I look at the stat sheet after the first period. They had him at 4-2. I'm like, where were these two losses? I don't remember them at all. What I do remember is that he was thrown out of some face-offs. Those are the only ones that he didn't win when he was on the ice because he didn't get a chance to take them. Then in the second period, so Phil and I are talking. I'm like, where were these two losses? So we're talking about in the second period, and Benn loses a face-off in the second period. It was in the offensive zone for the Stars. The Lightning won the draw. So I look at his numbers after the second period, and he's 7-2, meaning he went 3-0 in the second period. I'm like, first of all, he took way more than three face-offs in the second period. And second of all, we talked about the one that he lost, which I thought was the first one he had lost all game, yet they had him at 3-0 in the second period. So look, keeping these stats, it's not the easiest job in the world, but that's why sometimes you have to look at the stat sheet, particularly when it comes to ice time, which is really tricky. That is a hard stat to keep, at least until the chip technology becomes as widespread as they expect it to be. And then I think you may be getting down to the second, probably, in terms of accurate numbers for ice time for each individual player. But I think Jamie Benn played a lot more than 13 minutes halfway through the third period and probably finished with a lot more than whatever he finished with. And he finished 12-3 in the circle, which may probably be fairly accurate at the end of the day. But within the game, there were definitely some curious numbers there for him. But your point about, like, the Lightning defended well, the Stars needed a little bit more finish, is a fair one. Sagan and Radulov would have helped them in that regard. But I tell you what, Greg, it's not like the Lightning had a ton of scoring chances either. I mean, the Stars kind of did in the first and third a bit what the Lightning did in the second, which is they had a hard time having the puck, but they did help out their goalie a lot in the first and the third. Ottinger was very solid. There were not a lot of rebounds. He was making saves and covering pucks or gloving them. Like that Goodrow chance you mentioned, like he's in the high slot, but Ottinger is set for that. And you know, he sees it all the way. He made some good saves. I'm just saying it's not as though the Lightning overwhelmed the Stars with tons of scoring chances like we've seen in some other games for them. The difference is that the Lightning had two glorious chances and they buried both of them. And I'm not sure the Stars had anything close to the chances that Palat had, and then Coleman, obviously, on the penalty shot. Understanding that they had those chances in the second that I referenced.
Yeah.
The hints on the 2-on-1 and the Benn chance. Those were good chances, but Palat is hash marks, wide open, nobody in front of him. He beats the goalie, and Coleman has a great finish on the penalty shot goal. And that was all the Lightning needed because they were defending as well as they were.
Dave, I'm wondering, because I felt like in some ways, while I don't think it was the same intensity as a playoff game, I think you're right in terms of the scoring chances that were allowed for both teams. I think that's maybe something similar that you're going to see come playoff time. So I was happy that the Lightning were able to pull out a win, limiting scoring chances, but also not having a ton on their own. I mean, I think you're going to see that in the playoffs. We know right. that. We've covered various teams and leagues, and that's typically how it goes. I think the Lightning will get a huge benefit and a huge boost if and when Cooch and Stammer come back. But I do want to say this. I think it is somewhat impressive that the Lightning have been able to maybe find their game a little bit here over the last week or so. You know, offensively, it's been really hit or miss. I think defensively, they're getting better. But, you know, I keep going back to, I still think maybe outside a point that some of their reliable players aren't playing as well as we know they can, and they still come away with a 3-0 win last night. And so, in many ways, what I'm saying is it's a compliment to the Lightning team, but it also, I think, is room for optimism if you're a Lightning fan, a player, or a coach. Because I got to be honest with you, I'm looking at the Lightning and I'm thinking, I can't remember a stretch where I didn't think Anthony Cirelli wasn't making the noticeable impact he typically does. Dave, he's gone 20 games without a goal. I mean, this is Anthony Cirelli, who is, I mean, your second line center. Now, I know John Cooper was asked about this the other day, and he says, you know, look, we can't define guys by the goal sometimes, and it's what they do. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, you know, defensively and being gritty, and he does a lot of things for us, and that's true. But I think Anthony Cirelli specifically is a guy that has gotten to a point in his career where he's going to be called upon, you know, to be solid in the playoffs and to produce. I think he can get there. What I'm saying is it's still unusual for me to watch this team still and say, yeah, I know they're missing a couple of big guns, but I still feel like there is another level for some of these guys to get to, which is perplexing for me in some ways, but also makes me feel pretty good about the team because I don't think that level of play is going to stay the way it is right now, and eventually they are going to get over that hump and get going. Do you see some of that at all?
Well, I don't disagree about Cirelli's impact on games in terms of being dangerous offensively. So it's not like he's been getting 2-3 chances a game and just been foiled, and that's why he's in this long goal drought. Kind of like we were talking about with Barry Boulet. Like, Barry Boulet was getting chances and not scoring.
Right.
And then it finally happened for him, and he finished one of those chances. We're not really seeing that from Cirelli. But I will say this, less so in the second period, because the Lightning simply just didn't have the puck a lot. I thought Cirelli had a Cirelli-type game last night in terms of being hard on pucks. He made a few plays defensively in the first period that were very noteworthy. Like, extremely hard on a puck, made sure he got a puck out. I think one of his line mates or somebody who was on the ice for the Lightning didn't get it out at one point, and Cirelli provided support and basically took it away from the guy or made a play on the Dallas player who had held it in and forced it out of the zone. That's Anthony Cirelli hockey, and I would kind of follow up the offensive part by saying I don't think we've seen that part of his game either, but we saw it last night for a good part of that game. And I kind of think that the offense will follow from that. Like, if he starts delivering those sorts of performances, that's his bread and butter. And I think that will lead to offensive chances for him if he's going to be engaged the way that we've become accustomed to seeing him be engaged, which is like a dog with the bone on that puck. And I saw that from him last night. It didn't lead to any offense for him. He had a rebound chance. There weren't many offensive rebounds last night.
Yeah.
It was after Coleman had scored. So the Stars, I think, sagged a little bit. And it might have been the first shift 5-on-5 after the Lightning killed off that penalty. The Lightning got a puck to the net. And it might have been, while Sorelli was only credited with one shot. Again, taking the score sheet for what it's worth, I want to say that it was either Sorelli who brought it in and then there was a rebound from another player, or Sorelli got the rebound. I don't remember the play vividly, except that I do remember that Ottinger had to make two saves. So there was a first save and then a quick rebound, and Sorelli was involved. That might have been his one shot. Maybe he had both shots and he only got credit for one. But that's kind of what I'm talking about. Like, when his nose is dirty, whatever zone it may be in, I think that's going to help his game and bridge this gap between not having anything happen or not having enough happen on a regular basis in the offensive zone and having things happen in the offensive zone.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, there's another level for a lot of these guys to get to, which I think if you're John Cooper is very encouraging. You're going to get a lift from Stammer and Cooch coming back. But it was good to see them get a win against a team like the Stars in a way where they just really had to buckle down a little bit defensively, and they did it.
Yeah.
And I think any questions people had about this Lightning team playing well towards the end of the regular season into the playoffs, I thought last night went a long way in answering some of those questions. You want to see what they do against Detroit, though? I think that's going to be a little more difficult of a series than people think, just because.
Yeah,
what do you have to play for?
Detroit is feeling good. I know they're going to miss the playoffs, but yeah. Detroit is feeling, I think, that they are a group that has taken a step forward this year. And they do play the Lightning competitively. That has been true for several years now. A couple of quick stat points. So
yeah.
The play-by-play has Palat with the first shot, Sorelli with the second. So I will defer to that. That's probably correct. Sorelli had the rebound chance, but it was from right in front of the net. That's what you want to see from Sorelli.
Gotcha.
And Jamie Benn finished with 18 minutes and 51 seconds.
Yes, I did see
which
that.
Led all Dallas forwards. They still may be jipping him a little bit because Phil noted that Rick Bonus was double shifting Benn pretty early in that game.
He was.
He was.
And I
he
think
was
they had the
forward
line
night.
Going against.
He was. He
Ben.
Was really, really good.
Yeah.
For the Stars.
He was. Well, you need your best player as the lead, and Jamie Benn is their best player at this point, at least up front for sure.
I want to make one last point about the team defense, because I think there were a couple plays that were noteworthy. One of them involves Benn, which is why I thought of it. In the first period, there was a 2-on-1 the Lightning allowed, and Eric Chernak made a great play on Benn. Like, he went to him and just, they didn't even get a shot out of it. That was a terrific play. And David Savard had a big block on Hintz in the first period. So the Lightning's team defense led to, in the first and third, them having the puck a lot. And in the second, not giving up tons of chances. They kept the Stars to the outside. But those are two plays that could have been potential scoring chances for the Stars. But a play by Chernak off the rush against and the block by Savard meant that those chances never materialized. So that's part of it, too. That's part of good team defense.
I'm going to ask Dave Anderchuk this when we have him on. I think Chernak, you can make a strong case right now, is playing like their second-best defenseman. I mean, Hedman's the guy, even though Hedman's play, I think, is dipped. We've talked about that a little bit as to why that may be happening. I think that'll be corrected once the playoffs begin. I've told you, Dave, I thought Chernak has taken the same steps in his game from a positive perspective this year that Sergachev did last year. And I think Chernak has become so reliable defensively and noticeable when he's not in the lineup. I think it's a credit to him. It's not a knock on anybody that he maybe surpassed. My opinion, I think he's their second best defenseman right now. Speaks to what we wanted to get into maybe a little bit ago, a couple of days on the show about the who they protect and who they don't. I think it becomes a no-brainer at this point that Chernak is one of the guys, whether it's, 7-3-1 or whatever the other situation is where they have to protect four defensemen. He's got to be one of those guys. He is too valuable to this team, and I think we see that just about every game. But I want to ask Dave about that too, and we'll continue to break this down with you guys out there at Bolts Radio. What did you make of the Lightning win last night, one of the better ones of the season? Do you think Chernak is the second best defenseman right now on this team? And do you feel better about this Lightning team after that win with how many more regular season games? Six remaining on the schedule. We'll talk about that with Dave Anderchuk, former captain of the Tampa Bay Lightning, and of course, Hall of Famer. I am Greg Linnelli, along with Dave Michigan. It is Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play.
This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
All right, good win last night for the Tampa Bay Lightning, downing the Stars, shutting them out at Amalie Arena, 3-0. Greg Linnelli with you, along with the radio voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning, Dave Mishkin, Steve Ersnick producing. Hit us up on Twitter, at Bolts Radio, and joining us right now, special guest. Always love having him on the show, the captain, Hall of Famer. Let's welcome back to the program, Dave Andrechuk. You know, Dave, before we kind of do a deep dive into the Lightning, I'm curious, as somebody who obviously played at a high level, covered and still covers the league for the Lightning, are you kind of amazed at how well the players have done this year under these unusual circumstances? And do you maybe gain a little bit more respect for what these guys are going through, not only on the ice, but off the ice?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I think, you know, watching from afar last year, you know, when they were in the bubble, we can all think about, you know, what they went through. But now it's, you know, it's almost something similar, right? Like it's this condensed schedule. It's, you know, now they're traveling. You have no fans in the building, you know, to speak of. Some places do, some don't. And then, you know, you still can't go, you know, again, you can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. You can't be around your family. You know, if they come into town, you know, there's no going out for dinners on the road, and everything is in the hotel. So, yeah, mentally it's a trying year for everybody. And for us following it, you know, we're so locked in the Central Division, it's hard to keep tabs on, you know, the other divisions. We don't see them come in the building. We, you know, you can watch them on TV, but and I'm sure that the coaches are thinking the same thing. This, you know, you haven't seen this team live. You only got it on tape. And but hopefully we get out of the division and we can worry about that then.
Dave, last night was a really impressive showing for the Lightning defensively. And I actually want to ask you about the second period, because I think people who watched the game or were at the game were like, boy, the Lightning had some problems in the second period. They hardly had the puck at all, which is true. But what I took out of that second period was how well they defended, even though the Stars had all of the possession to speak of. They only got a couple of chances out of that period, the Stars, at most. How important is that when you get into the playoffs to be able to lean on your team defense and your structure when other parts of your game go sideways like they did in the second period? Or the other team is dialed in and surging. It's going to happen, right?
Yeah, we see it all the time, Dave, is that, you know, these are good players, right? You're not going to dominate the game for 60 minutes. And let's face it, they had a tremendous start last night. You know, I was a little concerned about how they were going to play against the desperate team. Well, they didn't wait to see what Dallas was going to do. They got off to a great start. And, you know, it could have been more in the first period. But you know Dallas is a desperate team, that they trying to get in the playoffs, and they were going to have their surge, so they did. And but as you said, kept everything to the outside, let Vasi see the shots, and that's a sign of a good team. And again, no panic. They ended up, you know, getting the lead going to the third, and you know, the third period was textbook in my mind. You know, two shots on goal for Dallas, a team that's that desperate. That's how you win, right? Like, and we saw that last year. Yeah, we saw a lot of goal scoring from them, but when it came down to it, they closed out games when they had leads, and they did that last night. It's a real good sign going into the stretch drive and in the playoffs.
Dave Andrechuk joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. You know, Dave, I'm curious, what does that tell you about the Lightning after their performance last night against a desperate team? Because we've seen Tampa Bay's play the last couple of weeks be a little bit up and down, and I've maintained that I don't know, they've known they're going to be in the playoffs for a while. Maybe this is more mental than physical. And there were some people that were questioning, well, look, they need to start playing well heading into the playoffs. And if they don't, you know, who knows what's going to happen. And I certainly respect that opinion. But I'm curious, when you see a performance like that one last night, does it give you a little more confidence that this team maybe not necessarily turns a switch on right away once the playoffs begin and gets back to their game, but maybe it won't take them as long to find their game if there's still some inconsistencies here to end the regular season with what they're doing?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. I think, you know, a little bit mental. They know where they're going to finish. They're going to be in the top, you know, three in the division. They're trying, obviously trying to win the division. But I just got a feeling that what was going on in the last week and what was said is that, you know, our playoffs don't start, you know, in mid-May. They start right now. And this is the stretch drive that we need to have. Okay, we've clinched the other night. We're playing a desperate team, so let's start playoff hockey, you know, starting tonight. And that's what I saw out of that team. You know, hopefully that's the sign for the next few games down here, down the stretch. You know, it'll be interesting, you know, the Steven Stamkos story of him coming back. We heard that he might be back before the end of the playoffs. Then Cooch comes in. A little bit of that is going to disrupt your lineup. So I think Coop is, you know, they've got some tough decisions ahead of them. But at the same time, I mean, just the way they play was the attitude of, you know, the playoffs start now, and we cannot turn the switch on in mid-May. Let's start playing good defensive hockey right now.
Dave, I want to ask you about Braden Point's faceoffs, because this one is a real confusing topic for me. Last year in the playoffs, he was at almost 58%. And it's not like we're talking about like four games. Like we're talking,
yeah.
He played 23 games last year in the playoffs. I'm looking at his numbers. He took over 350 faceoffs. That's a fairly substantial sample size. And, you know, he was well over 55%. He was at 57.7%. This year it has been a complete different story. He's been in the 40s most of the year, 45, 46. He had a tough night last night. And Ben was really dialed in and beat Point on a handful. But aside from the 50-50s, which Coop has talked about, and I get that, but there's more to it. There has to be more to it than just the 50-50s. Are you seeing anything from him when he's taking draws that might explain the huge drop-off and maybe what he can do to start fresh in the playoffs and at least be over 50%?
Well, face-offs have really changed over the little while here, Dave. And nobody, especially in the defensive zone or now even in the offensive zone, nobody is taking face-offs on their offside. They're all on their strong sides. So I guess, you know, that should be, to me, you know, a lot easier win when you're on your strong side, whether you're in the defensive zone or the offensive zone. I think where Braden runs into, and it would be interesting to find out the data of that, when he's in the neutral zone, you know, on an offside, you know, how is his face-off percentage then when he's not on his strong side? So, you know, we see when Steven Stamkos was in the lineup, he comes on for penalty kill or for defensive zone face-offs, but he's never taken it on his weak side. He's always on his strong side. So, you know, that said, you know, could skew the numbers a little bit. And Braden, you know, probably will not be, didn't take a lot of face-offs, you know, in the playoffs last year because he was with Steven Stamkos. So, you know, Stammer was taking face the majority of them. So, you know, I think right now he's also, you know, the pressure is on him to be that face-off guy because Stammer's out of the lineup. So, it's a big part of the game, and you know, as we know, especially in special teams, and I think they concentrate on it. Jeff Halpern, you know, the assistant coach, works with them, and I think they are concentrating on it. They know it's a five-man face-off. They've talked about it. You know, I know when I was a centerman and there was a 50-50 puck, my winger didn't come up with it. Didn't show up on his stats, but it showed up on mine. And I think that's a big part of winning is making sure that, you know, you get as many face-offs as you can.
Dave, I'm always curious, how much talking goes on during intermissions, particularly with the head coaches? I guess every locker room's different, but your time in the league, is that something that happened more as we've kind of gotten into this new age of technology, or do coaches typically let the players handle their business in between intermissions?
Well, I will say this, that yes, they let them handle their business until there's about 7 minutes to go in the period. So for half of it, you're probably, you know, within yourselves in the room. Now, there might be some guys that get pulled out because of the new technology, and they, you know, go and watch some video. You know, now you can just still sit at your stall and watch video, right? You don't have to leave the room. But I think after that, then the coach comes in, you know, with 5 to 7 minutes to go. And at that point is where there's some of the adjustments that are made, whether it's, you know, a forecheck adjustment or just kind of more, you know, a teaching moment. Hey, guys, we're getting caught too much, or, you know, we need to have a third man back. We need to watch their defenseman in the offensive zone a little bit more. So I think it's just more of that. But again, the way this season has gone, it's amazing to me too. When you listen to the players, a lot of them talk about the pre-scout. Well, during the pre-scout, I saw this, and during the, you know, pre-scout, I saw that. Because of you played this team so many times, you got lots of film, and the assistant coaches' jobs have doubled probably because of all the tape that you have on these teams. So yeah, it's important in between periods that you make those right adjustments.
It is going to be a race down the stretch to see who finishes first in the Central Division and which two teams are going to play each other in the 2-3 matchup. How important do you think it is for the Lightning to try and get into first, or is it less important than maybe it might be for Carolina or Florida, or is it all the same?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think we all have our own opinion, right? Like, I think, you know, in the Lightning's case, I don't think it's as much of an advantage. I think both Carolina and Florida want to start at home. I think that, you know, they're going into the playoffs. They might have a little bit of a different attitude going in than the Lightning have, because they've been there and done that before. And they're okay with, you know, starting on the road. They know it's not that big of a deal. It will be interesting down the stretch. Well, this is far from over in my mind. I think, you know, I know Carolina's pulled ahead of, but I think the Lightning can go on a little bit of a roll here and, you know, get by a few of them. You know, we'll see those two games at the end of the year against Florida, how those games go. Are those games where, you know, Coop just tests, you know, tinkers with his lineup because he's got Stamkos back in. He starts thinking about when Cooch comes back, where's he going to fit in? Or are those games, you know, important to get home ice advantage? And it's been, you know, that's what we want, right? We want action all the way down to the end. You want pressure all the way right through. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
Dave Andrzejczyk joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. Dave, speaking of Kucherov, understanding every player is different coming back from an injury and assuming Stammer and Cooch are ready to go for the playoffs, what are reasonable expectations for those two guys when they do come back during the most intense time of the year? I think fans think Cooch is going to get back to that 120-point level that we saw last year, and Stammer is going to be sniping it from the left circle. But understanding it may take a little bit of time for them to come back, when you look at those two players, what are your expectations once they rejoin the lineup in terms of their level of production?
Well, I think my expectations are probably lower than everybody else's, because understanding that it's not that easy to get into that kind of situation with the playoffs and the way the intensity comes up. In Cooch's case, I think, you know, Coop's got to be pretty careful with easing him into the lineup. And Stammer probably just, you know, he is going to need a game or two to get back to where he was before his injury. So maybe two different little scenarios there. But I also think these athletes are just in such unbelievable shape and so aware of, you know, their hockey IQ that they probably will surprise us. And Cooch will be, you know, back to Cooch that he was. So, but I am a little fearful of how that lineup is going to switch and the chemistry that these guys have going. So, but listen, hey, to get those two guys back in the lineup for the playoffs, I don't think you can say no.
Andy, you were moved at the deadline a couple of times in your career. I remember the one to Colorado for sure. Did you go to Did you go to New Jersey at the deadline as well? Was that a deadline?
I was a February. So, you know, okay. Not necessarily. I was the month before, right? Not necessarily okay. The deadline.
So you've had some at the deadline, some a little.
Anything after January to me is, you know, okay. A deadline deal.
So sometimes it might have been in the 15 to 20 games played range, maybe a little bit more sometimes with your new team. What have you thought of Savard's acclimation so far, and how challenging is it for a player to go to a new team that is gearing up for a Stanley Cup run and get acclimated?
Yeah, I think it's been difficult for him. It's got to be difficult for a defenseman. I thought the game just before he got hurt, I know he missed one game, I thought that was his best game. You can see him getting a little bit more involved offensively. And let's face it, I don't believe that John Tortorella's system allows that D just to go where he wants and to force all over the ice. You know, John plays that back in the box a little bit. Everybody, you know, crowd the middle of the ice and, you know, we'll allow shots from the outside. And that's a different system than Coop plays. So, you know, the Victor Hedman experiment, which we all knew was going to happen, and I think they might go back to that at times. You know, yeah, they got off to a really bad start, which was unfortunate. But now we've seen him with Victor or with, you know, Ryan McDonagh, and the two have been really, really good together. I think it allows, you know, Ryan to do what he does. And now you've seen, you know, Savard get a little more aggressive, especially, you know, kind of on the pinches. So a tough transition for him. You're just trying to fit in. You know, you're going to a really good team. You don't want to rock the boat, right? You just want to come in and slide in and just do my job and help out when I can. And I think he's done that.
Andy, I was curious, you know, when you take a look at the lineup, and you kind of mentioned it, I think for Lightning fans, and I think even us as broadcasters, that might be, if not the number one question, maybe the second is, who does come out of the lineup when Cooch and Stamkos come back in? It's no doubt a tough decision for sure, but also a good problem to have. Do you have some thoughts on who you think stays in the lineup? And do you think they know who their top six defensemen are? Again, that's assuming Jan Rutta comes back, because if he does, you almost want to say you give him the nod because of how good he's been with Victor Hedman, who I think we've seen his play dip a bit here the last couple of weeks.
Well, I will say that you're right. It's a good problem to have. I think guys have made, you know, pretty good arguments to keep them in the lineup. Ross Colton, for example, Matthew Joseph. I mean, it's hard to take them out. You know, Luke Shen has played really well. So, you know, yeah, I mean, how do you take Luke Shen out and how well he's played, whether, you know, if somebody else comes back in the lineup? So, tough decisions. I think we're going to see, you know, pretty rotating lineup, even when the playoffs start. I think you're going to see guys in and out, which isn't a really bad thing because the guy that gets in, you know, creates that energy that everybody feeds off of. You know, and we had the same thing in 04. You know, Eric Perrin, we never saw him the whole year, and all of a sudden he gets in the lineup. Well, wow, this kid is like working his tail off, and he's bringing us all up. And, you know, it's that little insertion of energy that they're going to get because obviously they got guys that are itching to get in the lineup.
Well, it should be a lot of fun, no doubt, and we're going to be looking forward to talking about it once the playoffs get here in a couple of weeks. And, Dave, great job as always. We enjoy the analysis, and we'll do it again real soon.
All right, guys. Have a good day.
All right.
Thanks, Andy.
Have a great weekend. Dave Andrychuk, the captain, the Hall of Famer, joining us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can at Bolts Radio. Why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break. When we return, we'll finish up with some questions and get you set for the weekend as the Lightning take on the Red Wings right here on Lightning Power Play.
The perfect social distancing distraction for your lunch hour. This is Power Lunch, only on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
Thanks to the Hall of Famer, Dave Andrychuk, who joined us in that previous segment. Always fun to catch up with him and pick his brain about the Lightning and what he's seeing around the league. I am Greg Linelli, along with Dave Michigan, Steve Ersnick producing. Hit us up on Twitter at Bolts Radio. Of course, we've got games this weekend in Detroit, afternoon games on the road. 3 o'clock starts both ways. You can listen to everything on Lightning Power Play starting at 2, and I'm sure Steve will be replaying Power Lunch throughout the weekend as well, leading you into those shows and the game. So make sure you stay tuned for that if you missed any of our programming. Because, Dave, I don't know why people would miss our show, but I understand people do have lives. I get that. But
well, if they're listening in their car, you might be driving home after work or maybe in the morning to work. If you are driving to work, how many people are still driving to work? Or have gone back to driving to work? I don't know how much the work landscape has been permanently changed.
I know.
With so many people finding that they can be productive working from home. Maybe some people have found that they are far less productive working from home.
Yeah,
I'm fine with it, though. I'm set up in a room. I got my microphone, computer. I'm talking to you.
Well, the thing about it is, for the most part, your kids are in school, right?
Yes, that is true.
And that helps. So my setup, give some inside baseball here to people. So I share an office with my wife, and she, you know, works out of her office. So she has Zoom meetings, and she is on calls. So we have to coordinate sometimes, you know, when I'm in here and when she's in here. But, you know, we got a little one who's 19 months who she may have made her Lightning debut on Power Lunch a couple of times yelling in the background, Dave. I don't know. But when she sees us at the door, you know, she'll like bang on the door and she'll like be smiling. That's why I have to like turn my mic down. But I think for some people, going back to the office probably feels a little liberating.
Well, I will say this, because I do drive my kids in to school in the morning, and I'm in Brandon and I go downtown. And so what I noticed at the start of the pandemic, how much easier the commute was.
Yeah.
When they started going back to school. So I shouldn't say the beginning of the pandemic, because they were at home last spring. But when they resumed, they did like 2 days a week in school. Now they're going 5 days a week. But two days a week, I drive in. I'm like, man,
I know.
This is easy. This is like driving at 2 o'clock in the morning. There's nobody on the road. And now it's starting to get not quite to the level it was at pre-pandemic, but closer. Which I guess is, I don't know if that's good or not good, but I think it's an indication that more people are getting in their cars to drive, if not to work, then to someplace in the morning.
I think it's liberating, honestly. I think we do miss interacting with coworkers. Now, our job's different because our workplace is basically the games, so we have to be there for the most part. And so we get a chance.
I see your pretty mug.
You see my baldness every game, which is nice. But like, you know, for something like this, when we do our shows, and we've been doing this for a while, we can do it from our house because technology allows us to do that. But it is nice to be able, I think, to go into the workplace and see everybody, because I do think that social interaction with people is something that a lot of people have missed the last year. And I think just to get out of the house is a little bit of a mental break, particularly if your kids were home during this whole time and doing, you know, schooling virtually. I mean, I think that is that can be tough on parents who are also working full time. So I appreciate, by the way, I appreciate all those parents that were doing it, because there was a lot of you out there, and I couldn't imagine doing that for a full year. So I think props to you. And if you're listening to Lightning Power Play, we hope we are making your day go by a little smoother, and we're dropping some knowledge on you. So kudos.
And we had a fun week too. We had a lot of interesting guests. And by the way, he was not a guest this past week, but we have had him on. Congratulations to Chris Johnston up in Canada. He did that virtual marathon. It wasn't a virtual marathon, but it wasn't like a marathon with 1,000 other people running. He ran 26.2 miles on his own to raise money for, was it Conquer COVID? Is that what it was?
I think it was for like the frontline workers too. Yes. Wasn't it something?
He raised money for frontline workers in Canada. And I saw Elliot Friedman actually posted his time. He ran his 26 miles.
Was it under 4 hours?
It was under 3:39.
That's impressive.
That is really impressive. Yeah.
That is very impressive. So that,
my days of even doing a mile at that pace are very far in the rearview window.
Yeah, well,
for me,
I always look at this too. You know, when you're younger, I don't know how you felt about this, Dave, but
Chris is not exactly, I mean, I think I'm older than him, but it's not like he's 18 or 22.
No, he's probably the same, around the same age as me, maybe a little bit older. But I think when you're younger, I think those personal goals, those times mean a little bit more. I think when you get older, you're just, I just want to finish. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's what probably.
I stopped wearing the smart watch that tracks the mile markers.
Correct.
And not even so much that it was depressing, like, boy, my times are really slowing down, which happens as you get older. It's more just a change of mentality.
I agree.
I want to be outside. And sure. If you like running, some people don't, as we've talked about, but I want to be outside. I want to enjoy my run, and my mile marker is my mile marker. Whether it's fast, slow, or somewhere in between, it doesn't really matter. So,
and I think that's one of the things, honestly, you take from this lockdown. I know we're getting off a little bit here, but was to get out and exercise. And I think hopefully a lot of people were able to do that. And
Chris did it in Toronto, here in Florida, whether it's January or June. In June, you probably want to go out early in the morning.
You mean like 4 o'clock
in the
morning?
But you can go outside, for a run. Right. You know, he was dealing with adverse weather conditions.
Yeah.
Beyond the heat, I mean, which is, you don't want to get heat stroke or anything like that, certainly. So you work around that in Florida, but it's much different than trying to run when there's an ice storm outside.
Yeah, no doubt. So
in Toronto.
To your point, I think anytime you accomplish running a marathon, that's a decent feat.
Yeah.
Not because Dave and I have done it before, but it's mentally, more than physically too, something that's a challenge. But congratulations to Chris and doing some good work behind the scenes. Dave, we've got like a couple of minutes here, and we've talked a lot about the Lightning. People can certainly weigh in and give us their thoughts on some of the questions we have posted at Bolts Radio. We're not going to do a huge deep dive into the other divisions, but anything kind of sticking out for you when it comes to the other teams? I know out west, the popular belief is that Vegas and Colorado, along with the Lightning, are the three best teams in the NHL. And, you know, without seeing them, we just have to go off of, you know, basically what other people are saying who cover them. I mean, you may catch a game every once in a while on TV, and I think we have an idea of who they have on their roster, and it's pretty impressive. I told you, I think Marc-Andre Fleury, I think, has closed the gap in being maybe the second-best goaltender right now in the league behind Vasi. He's been really good, and Vegas is a pretty deep team. But Colorado, I mean, this is not a surprise. We've seen these teams basically the last couple of years, Dave, be pretty good, and they're certainly right up there in the West.
What Vegas has done since the Golden Knights entered the league is really amazing when you think about it. And I know George McPhee deserves a lot of credit for manipulating, and I don't mean that in like a nefarious way, but he worked that expansion draft to a T, and I think teams have learned from it, which may work against Seattle, or have to wait and see. But, you know, to make the Stanley Cup final in your first year and then to make the playoffs in all four of your years of existence, and I mean, they aren't just making the playoffs, they are an elite team. And I think that's a credit to how they've run the organization. So in the West, it looks like it's going to be the four teams that are currently above the cut line. Arizona has fallen off. St. Louis has gotten hot. And that is the point I'm going to make. So right now it looks like Vegas is poised to finish first. I mean, it's not mathematically done yet, but Colorado and or Minnesota would have some work to do to catch them. So the 2-3 looks like it's going to be Colorado, Minnesota, and St. Louis has done well recently to kind of establish the fourth place spot for themselves. That will be a really interesting first round matchup, Vegas St. Louis, because this is something that Nick Alberga talked about, one of our guests who came on this week, that if you run into a team that emphasizes defense, team defense, extremely structured, and is playing well. So it's one thing to say, we want to be a defensive team, but if you're not executing well, it kind of goes out the window. But if you are dialed in and you are D'ing up really well, that can be a tough matchup for a team that Vegas is well-rounded, but certainly they have a lot of offensive pop. I wonder what we will make of a Vegas-St. Louis first-round series, if that, in fact, comes to pass.
That's a heck of a first round.
Like that could be a series. I'm not saying St. Louis would necessarily win it. But if they can D up at the level that they D'd up during their Stanley Cup run 2 years ago, and it looks like they're trending in the right direction right now, right? Like, that's why I'm saying it, because, you know, they just beat Minnesota in Minnesota.
Right.
They look like they're rounding into form. That could be a tricky first-round matchup for the Golden Knights. That's kind of what I think about out West. I have no idea what to make of a Colorado-Minnesota matchup. Colorado would seem to be the favorite there, but Minnesota has surprised a lot of people this year. I'm not sure everyone felt that they would be in the top four, and it looks like they're going to be in the top three when the West Division finishes up its regular season. So the Wild have had a good year.
Well, I think it's a good point, and I think Minnesota's one of those teams that's gotten a little bit better offensively, which is interesting, and they've had a couple of younger players step up. I think Parisi's on the fourth line right now, from what I've been reading and gathering.
Yeah, wasn't he a healthy scratch earlier this year, too?
I think that's been an interesting storyline.
In the other divisions, like Calgary got a win last night, so they're still hanging in there. I mean, I'm looking at Montreal's remaining schedule. They're facing a lot of playoff teams. They got two games left against Ottawa, but the other games they have, like, they have three against Toronto.
Yeah.
So this thing is not done yet. If Calgary would have to finish really well. And what's funny is Montreal is going to play all of their remaining games.
Yeah.
They have, what, eight left. They're going to play their eight while Calgary plays three. And then Calgary plays four games after Montreal's season is over.
Yeah.
Based on these rescheduled games. All four of those games are against Vancouver, too.
No doubt.
For Calgary. So that, I think, has some intrigue. And then in the East, big loss for the Rangers last night. I don't know that that was the final nail. Mathematically, it's not, but their tragic number is five. So that's going to be a battle down the stretch for seeding. And, I mean, I know that your heart is with Pittsburgh in the East. Do you have matchup,
Dave,
that you'd like to see them get?
I have
not
no allegiance.
Get in the first round, or you really don't care?
I don't care. I think any of those teams, honestly, it's going to be a dogfight. And, you know, we talk about the toughest divisions, and I think there were a lot of people who felt like maybe that East was the toughest because the four teams, and then you take in the Rangers, who, by the way, they're not going to make the playoffs most likely, Dave, and they're probably going to be the first non-playoff team this year to be plus goal differential.
Yeah.
Substantially. And not make the playoffs. Well, take that for what it is.
They played Philly how many times? How many points did Mika Zibanejad had have against the Flyers alone?
He had a season's worth of points against them. But I tell you what, without commenting too much on the Canadian division, I think the other three divisions stack up pretty well in terms of how good the top teams are. I think we're finding out the Lightning's division is pretty good. I think we're finding out, you know, the Blues division, you know, if they sneak in and take on Colorado or Vegas, that's a really good division. And then the one with Washington, Pittsburgh, and Boston, they've all been really good. And I think it's something to keep an eye on.
You know what's interesting in the East division, looking at Damian Echeverria's chart, which I always give him a plug because he puts this thing out. From now until the end of the regular season in the East, there are only three games to be played between those top four teams.
Yeah.
The vast majority of the games those teams are playing are against the four, including the Rangers here, but the four non-playoff teams.
Right.
That is very interesting. So, like, the Lightning have a couple of games left against Florida. You know, we talked about some of these other divisions. Like, Montreal plays a lot of teams in the playoffs above the cut line, above them in that North Division. You know, Washington and Pittsburgh play once, Washington and Boston play once, and Boston and the Islanders play once.
Yep.
And that's it. The rest of their games are all against Buffalo, the Devils, the Rangers, and the Flyers.
Yep.
It's interesting how it played out.
It's competitive all the way around. All right, we got games this weekend starting at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Be Lightning and Red Wings. Dave, great job this week. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Talk to you tomorrow, Greg.
Thanks to Steve Ersnick as well. Thanks to Dave Andertruck today. I'm Greg Linnelli. We'll be with you again tomorrow for the game, and then Dave and I back at it on Sunday, and then we've got our show noon to one on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody, right here on Lightning Power Play.